Daily Minutes, 20 april 2020. Dit is het bulletin van maandag. Daily Minutes, 20 april 2020. Dit is het bulletin van maandag. Ja, vandaag heb ik weer wat minder tijd voor de uitzending. Ik wil eigenlijk deze week wel beginnen weer met de serie over propagatie. Ik heb nog wat nieuwe dingen die ik zou willen proberen, maar vandaag gaat het helaas niet. En dus hou ik het kort. Het is 6:58, dus er is niet heel veel tijd. Ik heb wel een leuk item. Dat is een stukje van Steve Gibson, die ik heel lang geleden wel eens in de uitzending een stuk van heb gehad van zijn podcast Security Now. Let op, twittv.sn, Sierra November, twittv, twit.tv en dan schuine streep SN van Security Now. Daar kun je zijn podcast beluisteren. En hij vertelt in de meest recente podcast over het initiatief dat Google samen met Apple heeft om een app te ontwikkelen, een app-platform eigenlijk meer, wat in het besturingssysteem zelfs zit geïntegreerd, om daarmee coronapatiënten te kunnen volgen. Iets wat de Nederlandse en Belgische appmakers kennelijk niet erg lukt. Maar er is al wat te doen over die app de afgelopen week. Ik moet zeggen dat ik aangenaam verrast ben over het feit dat de politiek in ieder geval zijn goede wil toont en zegt van nou het gaat allemaal vrijwillig en we gaan de privacy heel hoog in het vaandel zetten. Heel mooi. Ze lijken niet gehinderd door veel kennis toch wat te veel haast te hebben. Maar goed, er gaan altijd dingen mis. Het is toch, ja, je hoort ook wel een hoop kritiek, maar het is, en er gaan echt dingen ernstig mis ook, maar er gaan ook heel veel dingen goed. En het is natuurlijk wel de eerste keer dat we zoiets meemaken. In ieder geval tijdens het leven van de mensen die er nu bij betrokken zijn. En ik vind het nogal wat. Dus het is improviseren. Het is domme dingen doen waar je helaas niks aan kan doen. Wat soms wel heel grote gevolgen heeft. Maar het is gewoon zo. En natuurlijk moeten we achteraf kijken of er niet mensen wat te verwijten valt. Maar we moeten nu gewoon verder. Alleen met die app, ik weet het niet. Wat ik niet wist, maar wat ik vandaag begreep, is dat de autoriteit persoonsgegevens tegenwoordig, dat noemen ze vaak een papieren tijger, maar het is wel zonder de instemming daarvan, kan de app door de overheid niet geïntroduceerd worden. En die club, die autoriteit, worden persoonsgegevens onder Aleid Wolse, die is niet zachtjes in zijn kritiek, kun je zeggen. Dat is echt, het is zelfs zo dat ze er openlijk over twijfelen of zo'n app überhaupt mogelijk is. Ik bedoel, hoe erg wil je het hebben? En naar aanleiding van de debacle van afgelopen weekend, waarbij heel veel apps gewoon niet, of 7 apps gewoon niet voldoende bleken te zijn, werd vervolgens aangekondigd niet dat er aanstaande dinsdag de app gekozen wordt, maar dat ze eens gaan kijken hoe de vlag erbij staat. Min of meer, niet letterlijk, maar wel ongeveer. Dus dat is nogal wat. Het initiatief van Google en Apple daarentegen, dat lijkt door de enige expert die ik erover gehoord heb, en dat is Steve Gibson weer. Die is er niet bij betrokken, want die heeft altijd hele onaardige dingen over die twee bedrijven gezegd. Maar Steve is redelijk positief erover. Dan moet je dat wel in het Amerikaanse perspectief zien. De privacy gaat daar een stuk minder ver dan dat het in Europa tegenwoordig gaat. Daar wordt in het begin, toen die GDPR ingevoerd zou worden, hoe heet dat? Die Europese wetgeving over privacy, toen werd er vanuit Amerika zo gedaan van het recht om vergeten te worden, dat moesten ze ook zo omlachen. Maar uiteindelijk was die wet helemaal ingevoerd en je ziet dat overal in alle landen met de Europese wetgeving rekening wordt gehouden, tot in China toe, want ze willen misschien wel eens wat hier verkopen en dan moet iets wel aan de Europese regels voldoen, want anders is dat niet mogelijk. En om allemaal regionale versies te maken, dat is bij apps ook niet helemaal haalbaar. Dus je ziet dat eigenlijk wereldwijd al die fabrikanten zich in no time conformeerden aan die strenge Europese regels. Ze zeiden van ja, we gaan gewoon meedoen en we gaan het implementeren. Nou lopen ze er wel eens de randjes bij vanaf. Maar toch, het is een grote verbetering wereldwijd. En nu zie je dat mensen in bijvoorbeeld Amerika toch al regelmatig in podcasts roepen dat ze best wel jaloers zijn op die wetgeving van ons hier. Dus ja, dat is heel mooi. Nou, die wetgeving die belet ook allerlei dingen die zo oorspronkelijk met de app van plan waren. Verplichten kan volgens mij niet. Bovendien is Europa ook bezig met een app. Dan moet je natuurlijk nog maar afwachten. Er zijn natuurlijk ook politici of die dat net zo goed of slecht doen als dat hier in Nederland gebeurt. Maar in ieder geval wilden ze daar in elk geval geen verbod op, of hoe zeg je dat, geen verplichting op die apps. Dus ja, dat is goed nieuws. Of die app er komt. Nou, als die vrijwillig is, vind ik het prima. Dan beoordeel ik het gewoon op mijn eigen criteria. En ik ben van heel goede zin. Ik bedoel, ik hou me keurig aan die intelligente lockdown. Daar ben ik ook wel erg over te spreken, moet ik zeggen. Want dat werkt erg goed. In eerste instantie, toen dat ingevoerd werd, hoorde je vanuit de omliggende landen, met name uit België, maar ook wel uit wat andere landen. Ja, Nederland moet zich toch, en de WHO geloof ik zelfs nog, die ze erover inmiddelen. Nederland zou toch wat strenger moeten zijn, maar ja, zeggen ze bij Zweden ook. In Zweden wonen de mensen heel ver uit elkaar, dus daardoor is het besmettingsgevaar daar ook een stuk minder. Maar dit lijkt heel goed te werken. En misschien wel omdat die Nederlanders zo eigenwijs zijn, dat als je ze vertelt dat ze de deur niet uit mogen, dat ze dan toch de straat op gaan. Als je ze vraagt van nou moet je horen, zo zit de vork in de steel. En het is heel belangrijk, ook voor je grootouders, om binnen te blijven. Dan doen die Nederlanders dat gewoon. Dat hadden die buitenlanders even niet. Nou ja, goed, hadden we zelf eigenlijk. Ik had ook niet gedacht dat dat zo goed zou gaan. Maar het is geweldig. Dus er gaan dingen goed, er gaan dingen fout. Maar in ieder geval is het aantal mensen dat erbij komt drastisch teruggelopen. En dat is heel goed. Jawel. Maar goed, over corona-apps. We hebben het er voortdurend over. Ik probeer het onderwerp, als ik het over het centrum van toerisme heb, altijd te mijden. Want ja, dan moet je het er dan ook over hebben. En eigenlijk, het bestaat vooral uit dit is afgelast, dat is afgelast, dit is afgelast. Hier waren het meer dan 2 mensen aan het zelf bouwen. Die zaten dichter dan een meter bij elkaar. En, nou ja, dat mag dan weer niet. Dus het zijn alleen maar, bijna alleen maar dat soort berichten. Ja, dat hoef je ook niet te brengen, denk ik dan. Hè. En bovendien, mensen moeten wel handen hebben. Die zijn dan maar dus ook. Jongens, maak QSO's, ga de band op of ga zitten knutselen. Nu heb je er de tijd voor als je niet hoeft te werken. Dus ik moet wel werken, af en toe. Maar ik ben in ieder geval binnen sinds twee weken weer aan het knutselen. En ik ben vandaag helaas niet met de antenne verder gekomen. Maar de afgelopen dagen heb ik steeds wel dingen eraan gedaan. En dit is nog maar de eerste antenne. Die komt er daarna nog eentje. Dit is de antenne voor de korte golf. Als die werkt, ga ik er eentje voor 2 meter maken. Dan voor 23 centimeter. En als ik dan nog zin heb, dan ga ik ook verder met de antenne, de DX-antenne voor 40 meter. We gaan het zien. Ik denk wel dat ik in de loop van deze week wel op 40 en op 30 meter actief ben. Dat ik daar in ieder geval weer kan zenden. Maar ja, nou is die web-SDR, ik weet niet of die gerepareerd is. Dat was dus de actieve antenne van stuk. Hè? De belangrijkste web-SDR. Maar goed, er zijn er wel meer. Dan kan ik eens terugluisteren of ik mijn signalen hoor. En misschien wel via het reverse beacon network. Hè? Dat is als je een Morse CQ zijnt. Dan zet hij je callsign op een website als je op een van hun ontvangers binnenkomt. En dat gaat heel automatisch. Dus dat is ook wel leuk. Nou ja, we gaan dat proberen de komende dagen. En dat is dan toch wel ruim een jaar geleden dat ik voor het laatst wat op de Korte Golf gedaan heb. Qua zenden, want luisteren doe ik wel veel. Meestal in Morse. Maar goed, we gaan nu ook eens wat in SSB doen. Hé, wat is dit? Dat lijkt verdikken me wel een vliegje. Wegwezen, beest. Hup, kom je nou weer binnen. Ik heb de bol niet zo vaak open, want ik heb in dit jaar getijden ongelooflijk last van hooikoorts. En soms is 10 minuten me al genoeg om de rest van de dag plezier te bezorgen. En een niet zo goed werkende stem. Dus ja, ik moet natuurlijk wel af en toe luchten. Eens even kijken, wat had ik nog meer? Daar zie ik een verhaal. Ik zie niet zo verschrikkelijk veel nieuws, maar op Southgate bij ARC.org staat iets leuks. Ik kijk nog wel eens naar video's van Urban Exploring. Dat zijn mensen die bijvoorbeeld een pretpark dat gesloten is bezoeken. Vaak zonder daar ook toestemming voor te hebben. Maar ja, echt inbreken is het niet. Ze worden wel door de politie weggestuurd en soms opgepakt. Maar het gaat er vooral om een filmpje te maken van iets wat al jaren verlaten is. Ook van de Buzzer. Dat is een van die nummerstations in Rusland. Daar is de oude locatie ook al meermalen bezocht. En ook waar nu de bosbranden zijn, nabij Tsjernobyl, waar de woodpecker zat. Daar zijn de gebouwen van de woodpecker ook diverse keren door Urban Explorers bezocht. Eigenlijk al te vaak. Je ziet ook echt vaak pretparken uit het land van ooit, volgens mij. Dat een aantal jaren geleden gestopt is. Dat is bezocht. En ook delen van Disneyland die niet meer in gebruik zijn. Het is een wereldwijd fenomeen. Spooksteden vind ik ook leuk. En verlaten vliegvelden. Vliegvelden waar langs de rand allemaal verlaten vliegtuigen liggen. Dat is allemaal geweldig. Maar een paar urban explorers die zelf kennelijk niets met de zendamateurhobby te maken hadden, die hebben op YouTube een filmpje gezet van een oude villa in Portugal, waar de muur vol met QSL-kaarten hangt. En dat is van Charlie Tango 1 Zulu Bravo. En die heeft daar tot 1995 gewoond. En vervolgens, oorzaak niet duidelijk. Tenminste, wordt uit de tekst niet duidelijk. Ik heb het filmpje nog niet gezien. Ik zal het linkje op het chatkanaal zetten. Maar 1995 tot 1995 is het huis bewoond geweest. Daarna is het verlaten. En de zendapparatuur staat er nog. En de QSL-kaarten die staan er nog. Ja, dat is geweldig leuk. Ik ga dat straks bekijken. Dit zijn van die dingen. Tjonge. Nou, goed. Daar sluit ik het dan nu mee af. Dan komt nu Steve Gibson met Security Now. Het laatste stukje van de aflevering van bijna een week geleden. En die gaat geheel over de Apple en Google apps voor coronamonitoring. Het bijhouden van wie heeft het wel, wie heeft het niet. En wie is bij wie in de buurt geweest en moet nu voor straf thuis. Nou, niet voor straf, maar moet nu thuis blijven.
All right, Steve. Back to work.
Okay. So, what we know is that Apple and Google have engineers, crypto people, have gotten together and designed something which they are immediately implementing. I think they're working, both of them, on putting this into APIs on their respective platforms, to which applications can be written. But they've also said that because they recognize that the potential need for contact tracing is not going away anytime soon, they intend to, as soon as they can, submerge this technology into the underlying OS. So contact tracing with this design will be part of both iOS and Android moving forward. So what I want to do is first explain exactly what the technology is, exactly how it works, and then, Leo, you and I will discuss, you know, the implications and upsides and downsides and spoofing and all the other things. Okay, so I should just mention that even when this is submerged into the phone, this is it's interesting. Notice it's not contact tracking. It's because I'm sure tracking is a bad word. It's contact tracing. So, but even so, I'm sure there will be a setting to turn it off if you don't want that feature on in your iOS or Android device. So, all of this is explicitly opt-in, and if the user chooses to participate in this. And I was listening to you talk about this in MacBreak Weekly and agreeing that this potentially offers enough collective benefit, and I think we will see from the technology that they have really dealt with the arguments that uninformed people have, that this makes a lot of sense. Okay, so when contact tracing is first brought up on a device, iOS, Android, whatever. And you're right, Leo, for people who don't have smartphones, it would be entirely possible to have a little credit card size puck of some sort, which is only a Bluetooth beacon thing, to have like some lower cost alternative if there was some reason to do that. So you could certainly do that. So each instance synthesizes from high entropy a single master tracing key. So that is, so it's a 256-bit master ID for the device. There's only one of them. It is well protected, never need for it to be changed. So each device has this single master key. From that, a tracing key. There's the master tracing key. From that, a daily tracing key, which is half the size, it's 128-bit, is deterministically derived from hashing the master tracing key with the Unix epoch day number, which we know is the number of days since January 1st, 1970. So this tracing key, the daily tracing key, changes every day, once per day, and it's derived from the master tracing key. But because the daily tracing key is the output of an HMAC-based key derivation function, the master tracing key is never revealed, and the daily sequence of daily tracing keys cannot be predicted. So, however, as we'll see, and this is important, the device that contains the master tracing key can itself, because it alone has the master tracing key, it can recreate any previous day's daily tracing keys that it may choose to. And we'll see why that's important here in a second. Okay. If the user of the device should subsequently test positive for COVID-19, the user can instruct the device to upload to a regional health server a block of previous day's daily tracing keys for the period during which they may have been contagious. So we'll just sort of hold that thought for a second, because there's more we need to explain, but I wanted to explain where. So there's the master key. The master key is hashed with the day in order to produce a daily key, which because the day changes every day, that daily key changes every day. But the way this is designed, the way they designed it this way, is that if at some point, any point in the future, you were to test positive for COVID-19, you could say, oh, shoot. And you could upload to a shared server, and we'll talk about the way that's done in a second, the set of previous day's tracing keys. They don't reveal the master key. They're just the tracing keys that you had on earlier days. So the point is, because they are derived from the day number, you don't need to store those daily tracing keys. You can get them anytime you want. Okay, so we've got a daily tracing key. The thing that is actually transmitted in the Bluetooth beacon is called a rolling proximity identifier. Oh, and I forgot to mention, because this reminds me here again, the tracing key is half size. Remember, the master key is 256 bits. We want 256 bits for maximum entropy, so we don't get collisions among these randomly chosen tracing keys, because they're all just chosen independently. The daily tracing key is a compromise, because they do transact online. They need to be stored in a server, and the only real need is to avoid collisions. It's a half-size key, 128-bit key, which provides still plenty of entropy, but it was chopped in half just because there was no need there for 256 bits. Okay, so the rolling proximity identifier is also a half size, that is a chopped in half. It's a 16-byte, 128-bit value. sent out as the beacon from all participating devices. We've discussed several times in the past how to prevent Bluetooth tracking. All modern devices already randomize their Bluetooth MAC addresses. Those MAC addresses change on a random schedule between once every 10 to 20 minutes, so on average every 15 minutes. So, but when you see 15 minutes, think of, well, yeah, but actually it's between 10 and 20 minutes. The device chooses a time period in the future between 10 and 20 minutes to next rotate or, you know, pick a new Bluetooth MAC address. The system's, this rolling proximity identifier, which is a thing that is actually sent, it is changed synchronously with the MAC address changes. So the rolling proximity identifier changes with the MAC address. When the user has enabled contact tracing, every time their Bluetooth MAC address changes, a new rolling proximity identifier is generated. That's the actual data contained by the Bluetooth packet. Since the Bluetooth MAC address and the rolling proximity identifier change synchronously, what that means is that no single identifier will straddle MAC addresses, and no single MAC address will straddle identifiers. That means it's not possible to link and track contact tracing by MAC address or vice versa. The value of this 128-bit rolling proximity identifier is also fully deterministic, fully determined. It's derived from that daily tracing key and a 10-minute window number from the start of the day. So it's you take the number of seconds so far that you are into the day, divide that by the number of seconds in 10 minutes to get an integer, which is essentially the 10-minute interval that you're in. So that's something that will be changing every 10 minutes throughout the day. So everyone who's voluntarily participating in this contact tracing system is emitting 128-bit identifiers, which are ultimately derived from their master, that grandmaster 256-bit master tracing key, which in turn creates a daily tracing key based on the day of the epoch that we're all in together, the number of days since January 1st, 1970, which is then used, it's hashed with along with the 10-minute window of the time of day to create a proximity, this rolling proximity identifier, which changes every 10 minutes. And this was cleverly done. They clearly did this on purpose. Notice that since the MAC address changes every 10 to 20 minutes and the rolling proximity identifier is calculated on a 10-minute scale, no two sequential MAC addresses can ever have the same rolling proximity identifier. So this was carefully assembled to ensure privacy. Okay. So we have a system where participating devices are broadcasting an identifier which changes unpredictably from the outside once every 10 to 20 minutes. And again, because it changes with the MAC address and the MAC address interval is deliberately fuzzed, it's on an average of every 15 minutes. And every participating device is also collecting all of the similar incoming 128-bit rolling proximity identifiers from everyone nearby. You could also use for example, the received signal strength identifier, if you wanted to get some sense of the physical proximity of the two devices. So, for example, the API might say, well, you know, yes, we received the beacon, but my God, the received signal strength is so low that that's probably further away than viral contamination could occur, so we're not going to bother with that one. So there might be a received signal strength threshold below which the beacons, even though they are received, they are ignored as just being, you know, unlikely to actually represent the other person or you represent a threat to either of you. Okay, so if the device has not before seen the 128-bit rolling proximity identifier, it will be maintaining a list of them. So if it hasn't seen it, it will add it to the list. And since there's no need to retain previously received rolling proximity identifiers forever, they can be and will be deleted from the receiving devices after they've aged out at what I've seen written is 21 days. That could be changed to 28 or it could be whatever. But the point is you don't need to keep them forever. Okay, so now, someone who's been participating tests positive for COVID-19. If they choose to, that is presumably at their discretion, maybe they don't have a choice in China, I don't know. But here in the U.S., we probably still have a choice. At their discretion to help the world and to help protect their friends and family, they choose to notify everyone whom they may have been in contact with during the days prior to their diagnosis when presumably they were contagious. So they instruct their device to notify the world. Their device alone contains that single derived from pure entropy master tracing key, which, based upon the Unix epoch day, derives the daily tracing key. So the device goes back some number of days and uploads each day's tracing key, during which time they may have been contagious. And in the process, we relabel these tracing keys diagnosis keys. Once they have been associated with a COVID-19 positive individual, they become diagnosis keys by definition. So think about this. All of the rolling proximity identifiers, which were emitted by that user's device on any given day, were derived solely from that daily tracing key and the time of day in those 10-minute windows. That means that anyone else who obtains those daily tracing keys, now called diagnosis keys, anyone who obtains those diagnosis keys is also able to re-derive the same set of Bluetooth beacons that the COVID-19 positive user's device transmitted that day. So on the receiving end, every participating user's device periodically downloads all of the daily diagnosis keys, presumably from people in their region, because there's no reason to get them from countries you are not located in, and presumably only since you last downloaded them. So it might be a daily thing. You might tell the server, last time I checked in was this time and date. Give me any new diagnosis keys for where I am now or within some region that I haven't previously seen. For any new keys that the device has not already received, the user's device simply recreates the original rolling proximity identifiers, which were originally derived from the now believed to be infected user under their tracing key. they use what we now call the diagnosis key to recreate the same set of rolling proximity identifiers, and they check their list. They remember they're storing all the ones that they've seen, so they look for a collision. That is, do any of the resynthesized rolling proximity indicators match any that were received during the last 21 days? If so, the person knows they have had a potential exposure to somebody who has since claimed that they are COVID-19 positive. They have no idea who, they have no idea when. Well, actually, they would know what day it was, and presumably their device might choose to tell them this was the day that a collision was found. So if there are any matches, the recipient user knows that someone whose device theirs was close enough to, presumably to exchange Bluetooth beacons and presumably with a high enough received strength indication, has posted a diagnosis key that they received, a diagnosis key that generated a rolling indicator that they received that day. So that's the system. It is carefully thought out. I've gone through the spec. I've looked at the crypto. These guys didn't miss anything. And so that's the system that apparently without any modification, iOS and Android will both have in short order. We need applications, and we also need to do something about the things that can go wrong. So what can go wrong? Moxie Marlin Spike, who has earned and deserved everyone's respect as a crypto-savvy researcher, he developed Signal and did a stunning job with Signal. It apparently, in some what I presume are an initial bunch of tweets, he got some things wrong. And I presume it's just because he didn't have time to sit down and read through the spec carefully. Because, for example, he was immediately worried about MAC address tracking. And, the spec explicitly explains how that cannot happen. There is no fixed Bluetooth MAC address that can be associated with these tokens by design. He also talked about huge amounts of bandwidth being consumed. I assume that he was presuming that the tokens themselves are what would be transacted rather than the diagnosis keys. One of the cleverest things about this is that we have HMAC-based keying that only allows these things to be generated in a forward-going manner, and the diagnosis key, knowing the day, allows you to resynthesize all of the individual rolling keys. So anyway, these guys, from a crypto standpoint, they have produced a very powerful system. One non-malicious problem that could arise is that radio proximity does not perfectly match viral propagation proximity. In other words, the way I think of it is your device, for example, might be exchanging beacons with people in the apartment above, below, and to either side of yours. But that, depending upon how well this received strength indication is used, assuming it is, that doesn't mean because you can receive their radio signal that they would represent a source of viral contagion. So the system could potentially false positive if you happen to have your phones on either side of a wall so that the signal strengths were strong, and somebody on the other side of the wall later came down with COVID-19.
What's the range of LE? It's less than regular Bluetooth, I would bet.
That's a really good question. I don't know. You're right.
It's low energy, so that sounds like it must be.
Yeah, we ought to. That's a really good point. I was just assuming it was the same 10 meters, thus 30 feet. But it may be that it is enough shorter that like you're already going to be you know, need to be within, you know, sneezing distance in order to reach the other person. And of course, the other glitch is, and this is something I haven't seen, I haven't read anything about, is you don't want people spoofing their COVID-19 infections onto the server. So, for example, you wouldn't want somebody going to a concert and spending the night, you know, in proximity to as many people as they possibly could, and then misrepresenting the fact that they're now COVID-19 positive and causing a false positive alert to everyone. So we do, if nothing else, the Zoom fiasco has, you know, the Zoom startup fiasco has shown that, you know, the social engineering side also needs to have attention paid to it. We've nailed the technology side. So I don't know how we'll handle that. It needs to be done correctly, but we really do have a beautiful technical solution, I think. There's no notion of user identity. It's not encoded. It's not encrypted. It just isn't there. These things are coming out of a HMAC, and it's just random gibberish. There's no sense of location. That is the
so
protocol.
So it's not related to – it's not – you can't derive the randomly generated MAC addresses from this HMAC. Moxie Marlin Spike's concerns was you're – then all of a sudden, you know, somebody tests positive, he's going to have it's going to publish all of his – rotating Bluetooth MAC addresses.
Well, there's two different things here.
I know there's these derived ones.
Well, so there's the MAC address, and that's separate from the payload of the Bluetooth packet, the rolling proximity identifier.
Yeah,
that's the data contained by the Bluetooth packet.
But it has to be able to link to back to the person who generated it at some point, if you test positive.
Yes.
So you must be able to derive the MAC address from that.
Not the MAC address. The MAC address is different from the rolling proximity identifier.
Okay.
The MAC address is the communications link.
Right.
The rolling proximity identifier is the 128-bit tag carried by, you know, in the
payload.
And
that's generated randomly.
And well, that's generated through this HMAC, which is clever because it allows them to be recreated from the daily tracing key,
right?
Which is then called the diagnosis key.
But it's a one-way trans.
Yeah, it is a one-way function.
Okay.
But you put the same thing in, you're going to get the same thing out, which is the elegance of this because it means you just post your diagnosis keys, the keys for the days that you were contagious, and everybody who receives those can then regenerate the whole day's worth of rolling proximity identifiers to see if they have any collisions, if they have any matches.
So he says the moment you test positive, he misunderstood it. He says all of your BTLE MAC addresses over the previous period become linkable.
Yes,
that is not the
not
case.
True. Okay. Yep, not the case.
That would certainly be an issue, obviously, because the reason you rotate them
is and it's also very clear that Apple and Google knew this because they deliberately made the 10-minute period on the inside of when the MAC address rotates or changes. So there is just absolutely – oh, and they also made them change synchronously, and the spec specifically says that. So I just think that Moxie, you know, maybe he – I don't know, had a bad hair day. Well, you've seen him, so that's not much of a stretch. Who knows? But there is no MAC address linkability. They really nailed it, the technology. It's beautiful.
Right. Okay.
So we need to solve the social engineering problem. We need not to allow people to post to what will become an important tracing database if they aren't actually recently shown to be positive. But you know that could be under the control of local health officials who, so we don't yet know how they're going to be distributing or managing antibody testing. But the cool thing is you can't have tracing unless you have the technical foundation. To their credit, Apple and Google instantly stepped up and created a perfect technology base for then on which can be built the tracing that we probably need throughout the world moving forward.
Mm. Yeah, it's clever. They say that Apple and Google will push out these APIs in the next couple of weeks, or mid-May, I guess. So that's about a month from now. And so they'll be available to apps at that point with operating system updates. And then apps will come later from those two. There'll be reference apps, both from Apple and Google.
Oh, I mean, I could write this overnight. I mean, yeah. It's really simple. It's very – I mean, that's what you want. You want a clean, simple, obvious – obviously, provably correct system. And, yeah, you know,
that's the best place to start. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm relieved. That seems good.
And there we have a podcast.
Very interesting.
And all of our listeners know how it works now. And I have a feeling it may be in our lives.
It's very elegant.
In the future.
Yeah. It's very elegant. Yeah. I think it's very interesting. Steve Gibson's at grc.com. That's where the podcast lives as well. GRC is the home for SpinRight. That's that thing he's working on, SpinRight 6.1. You'll find the world's best hard drive maintenance recovery utility at grc.com, along with a lot of other freebies, including Shields Up, and, of course, the show.
I'm Peter John in English Media. Title music is by Croatian artist Blasko and is published under Creative Commons. You can find this podcast on dmpodcast.net, DM is for Daily Minutes, and on several other platforms. De internetfaciliteiten en studio hardware voor Daily Minutes worden gesponsord door 70MHzShop.nl. 70MHzShop.nl.
Daily Minutes Podcast. Whoever hears this is crazy.
En microfoon naar retour.